You are listening to TRC Unleashed.
And just like that, Arkansas's got it first and 10 at the Carolina 36. Picked off though, Carolina, turn it, go, inside the 50, 40, 30, Swearinger, he just had a penalty, 10, 5, revenge is something, boom, 69 yards, there's a penalty on the play.
Well, what he did is he threw the ball in the stands, you can't
do
that.
Who cares?
Hello, Gamecock Nation. Welcome to TRC Unleashed, episode number 37. I am your host, Buck, and I am joined by fellow rubber Chickensians. Is that a word? Chickensians?
Chickens. No.
It's not. Well, T-Bone and the G-Man are with me on the show tonight. Hey, it was a big weekend for Gamecock sports. We ended a three-game losing streak to Arkansas with a 38-20 win on Saturday. And the Frank Martin era at South Carolina got underway with an 80-75 win over the Milwaukee Bucks, which is pretty impressive to start off your career with a win over an NBA team. So
that's right.
Congratulations to the Gamecocks there. The women's team, I think, won two games. They won Friday, and then they won again on Monday night. T-Bone, how'd the equestrian team do?
From what I understand, they did excellently, riding the what animals do they ride? I don't know. I'm not sure if the equestrian team had an event this weekend, but if they did, I'm sure they did really well.
They were shown at halftime. Were they honored at halftime? Was it anyway? They were.
Oh, I thought those were horses.
Hey man, you can bust on them all you want, but I think they're number one in the country.
They are number one. Well, they beat number one in the country. I know. I think there's only like three teams in the country though. It's like Auburn, Georgia, and South Carolina.
Don't minimize it. You know, number one's number one.
Well, there were some pretty hot looking chicks out there too. I got to tell you, rich girls that have enough money to ride horses. That's a pretty good combo. Anyway, that's our equestrian update for today. So, we have a strategy at TRC to serve you, the fan, and we've somewhat centered our lives around that service. And by that, we have this three-pronged strategy with G-Man keeps his finger on the pulse of all things Gamecock by living in Columbia. T-Bone has sacrificed a whole lot for you guys. I mean, a lot by putting down stakes in the heart of Pickens County to keep up with what's going on with our hated rivals. And then I serve you by just living in the heart of SEC country in Atlanta, where I can pretty much keep an eye on everybody and everything. So,
and you're also tech support.
And I'm also tech support. Exactly. But this Saturday, after five long years, we were finally able to attend a game together at Williams-Brice Stadium again.
And that's not as romantic as it sounds.
No, it's not. It's not. It didn't end well. I mean, we had to break up and go our separate ways again. But I will say this. It was much more enjoyable than the last two times we were at South Carolina games together. And those two games were the 2009 PapaJohns.com Bowl in Birmingham, Alabama.
Still cold.
And I shivered when you said that.
Lost a few toes at that game. And then the 2010 Chick-fil-A Bowl. So, and I broke a personal four-game South Carolina losing streak with that game on Saturday. So that felt good to finally get out of there with a win. And just to let the Gamecock Nation know it's not my fault that we're losing. So on to the game. We saw another, a pretty typical performance by our offense, I think. We struggle at times, and somehow we wind up putting up 38 points, and we probably could have scored 52 pretty easily if we'd have made some plays in the fourth quarter. Our offense pretty much begins and ends with Connor Shaw now, and he had 272 yards on what I think was 14 of 22 passing, something in that. So really, really nice yards per attempt average there for him. Bruce Ellington went over 100 yards, 100 receiving yards for the second straight game after having only 17 catches in his first eight games. He now has 11 catches in the last two. And so T-Bone, is Bruce Ellington, is he our number one option at wide receiver now?
Well, if he's not, he should be. I mean, you know, we all love Ace Sanders. Although, if you look back at that game Saturday, I'm missing me some Ace Sanders highlights. There weren't a lot in that game. I think there was one play that could have gone for a touchdown if Shaw would have hit him. But I'm telling you, Bruce looked good out there. You feel like he started to really, you know, maybe not just know the plays, but understand the why. That touchdown pass he had where apparently he just recognized the coverage, settled into a little hole and waited for the ball to get there and then made a nifty move and got in the end zone. He's starting to look like he really belongs in this offense, and it couldn't come at a better time. Playmakers is something we need right now. What with, you know, 21 being hurt and all.
Yeah, and Demir Byrd has kind of disappeared. I don't even think he had a ball come his way on Saturday.
He did run the reverse for negative 4 yards one time.
Right, yeah. Well, good. At least he got to touch the ball. That was good. Kenny Miles was Kenny Miles. I don't know what were his final stats, like 14 for 34, something in that range. He was averaged about, you know, a little over 2 yards a carry. I think we really hoped Mike Davis would have his breakout game, and he didn't look bad. He had some nice runs, scored his first collegiate touchdown, and Jarrell Adams had his first collegiate touchdown. Shaq Rowland had a couple of catches. So is there anything, G-Man, you think we can expect from the freshman in these last two games?
You mean Rowland and Adams?
And Mike Davis.
And Davis. I think you're going to see Davis's role increase. I think that's gradually going to happen. I think they realize that they're going to need that between the tackles guy that, you know, Marcus certainly provided. And Kenny is, as we know, is not going to break a bunch of tackles at the line of scrimmage and gut out those 3 and 4 yard gains. I mean, if there's a hole, he's very quick, can get through the hole and get you a burst, get you some yardage, but he's not going to break a lot of tackles. And certainly you need that in our conference and in our offense. You need that guy who can do that. So I think you're going to see Davis get the ball more. As for the other two, Rowland and Adams, I don't think you're really going to see their roles increase much. I think Adams will continue to get some snaps. I mean, we're obviously loaded at tight end. You don't really need him to be the man yet, to sort of ease him into that role. And Rowland, I'm kind of wondering if we should have redshirted the guy at this point. It is what it is at this point. So he's obviously not emerging to be an Alshon replacement right away. I think he needs to get a little bigger, a little more confidence, and I think that will come. I think he's still going to do some really good things here, but I'm not seeing him emerge as a regular member of the rotation. I think we're pretty much settled in at wide receiver for what we're going to do.
Yeah, you mentioned, not to step back on you, Buck, here, but you mentioned Shaq Rowland caught a couple of balls to follow up on what the G-Man is saying. The only problem with the couple of balls that he caught is they were on one pass. He tends to catch the ball, bobble, and then secure it. He's done that a couple times this year. But not on the freshman. There's another, I think, component to our offense that is missing right now, and I'm curious y'all's thoughts on this. This is an offense that put up, what, 40, you know, 38, 40, whatever this past Saturday, and then put up, you know, more than that the previous Saturday, so it's kind of hard to poke too many holes. But how many times is Shaw keeping the ball these days?
Well, that's by design, I think. I mean, he's dinged up. His shoulder, I'm sure, still probably not 100%. He's got a foot injury, and I think they're doing all they can to keep him healthy and get him through the season. And I think if he makes it through this week of practice in the Wofford game, relatively healthy, I think you're going to see them take all the restraints off of him in the final regular season game up in Pickens County. I think you're going to see him operating at full capacity, you know, even with the injuries, like, you know, see him running, because I think that's going to be a necessity. But I think right now that's by design. I mean, you saw the ball leave his hands a lot quicker on Saturday. I think that's, you know, get the ball in your hands, get the ball out of your hands.
Yeah, and I was going to bring that up as well. And I don't know if I mentioned this while we were at the game, but it just didn't seem like there were as many plays there for just designed quarterback runs. I think they ran the option twice. He had the quarterback draw for the touchdown, but you just didn't see him keeping the ball on the zone read like he usually does. And I agree, G-Man. I think that foot was hurting him. And I think it got progressively worse throughout the game. Maybe got it banged up a little bit. And you know, we talked about it a little bit. I doubt Spurrier will do this, but it wouldn't hurt my feelings if he sat him against Wofford and just went with Dylan Thompson to get Shaw rested up for Clemson. But I'm sure we'll see Shaw for at least half the game on Saturday. And you know, based on the way we've played against Wofford the last two times, we'll probably need him for the entire game. So we'll see how that goes. On the defensive side of the ball, we had one of the better defensive performances I think we've seen by anyone in a South Carolina uniform in a long time. DJ Swearinger was named the Walter Camp National Defensive Player of the Week yesterday, which was a great honor. He had 13 tackles, 10 of those solo, a 69-yard interception return for a TD, and also had 15-yard penalties on three consecutive plays.
That might be a record.
That's got to be some kind of a record, because usually if somebody gets like two 15-yard penalties in a row, it's because they're arguing and they get kicked out of the game. But it was kind of – I don't know if you guys saw his comments. I don't know if – it may have been at the press conference today. He actually defended the referee just a little bit on the targeting hit that he got. He said, I got low and I tried to turn my shoulders, but I just didn't get turned as much as I wanted to. And he said something to the effect, you know, at full speed, I don't particularly blame the guy for throwing the flag. So he, you know, came to the defense of the referee a little bit there. But he has turned into quite a football player for us over the last few years. And then there was another guy on defense that played pretty well, T-Bone.
What's his – I can't think of his name. He wears a single digit.
He does. Sure. He does. And he – I was watching that sack of Tyler Wilson where he just, like, leaves his feet. It almost looks like a swing dance move. He like, grabs him and swings his legs around. That is a fun sack to watch because he just swallows up Tyler Wilson. And, you know, Clowney made a comment after the game – that they apparently don't call holding in the Southeastern Conference anymore, something along those lines. G-Man, you think that was a calculated comment, or do you think that was just kind of off the cuff?
I don't think that was calculated. I think that's off the cuff. I think he's just stating the truth. I think I heard him say you basically have to tackle him now to get the holding call, and that's pretty much true. I mean, you don't see the flag come out. I think they called holding in the first half on one play where Clowney was held, and I remember seeing the guy kind of dragging him down from behind. I think you just in this league, I think it's just a call that just it's got to be pretty obvious now for them to you know bring the hanky out, and that's just the way it is, unfortunately, for him. But I wanted to give a little credit to the other DN who doesn't get as much publicity. I mean, Clowney deserves all he gets, but I don't know if you guys remember the play, but it was down the goal line when Arkansas ended up kicking a field goal. They did a little bootleg play, and Devin Taylor came off the edge and just annihilated Wilson. I don't know if y'all remember that.
Yeah.
Wilson hobbled around, limping around for like, you know, two or three plays after that. I remember thinking, you know, Taylor almost took his head off. That made me feel good to see him out there, you know, kind of making a play like we're used to seeing him make.
Yeah,
that was on the left end, and I think they were heading into the student section on that play.
That's right. Yeah. And it was a little bootleg, and he was unblocked, and he just destroyed him. And Wilson threw the ball into the stands, and he just got smashed by Devin.
Yeah. You know, back to the Clowney comment, the reason you may be right, might have just been off the cuff, but I couldn't help but think, you know, maybe one of the coaches told him to say that, or maybe he's thinking, you know, maybe I can plant a seed in these SEC referees' minds, you know, for the last couple of games.
I think there's probably something to that. I mean, we can't definitely say that happened, but right. Leaning on the refs is an art form. And I'm telling you, I'm not going to say half the calls out there are this, but I bet you a quarter of the calls out there are some form of a makeup call. I mean, how many times have you seen a personal foul call, then a series later one go the other way, or an interference call, then a series later it goes the other way? You know, these guys are human, and they're subject to pressure and everything else. And it wouldn't mind. I would not mind at all if in the film room a couple days before we play Clemson, the SEC refs, who will be the refs we have, sit around and talk about holding for a few minutes.
Right.
That's a good thing for us.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree. That would be nice if the calls started showing up at the at that ball game.
Yeah. Well, you can, and we didn't have the best view at times, but you could hear the crowd reacting, on a few plays when Clowney looked like he may have been held, but. Yeah, hopefully they'll start calling that a little bit more. Maybe maybe Clowney will turn into a little bit of a Michael Jordan, get some Jordan rules out there, throw a few extra flags. But, the other thing I wanted to mention on defense, you know, and it concerns me about the Clemson game. We've praised Jimmy Legree and Victor Hampton a lot this year, but, man, Legree in particular looked a little lost out there in the first half. They were just kind of indecisive, I guess, is the best way to put it. Tyler Wilson was throwing just a lot of quick passes to the outside, and it looked like Legree more than Hampton, but I can think of at least one play where Hampton did it. They're kind of caught in the middle of, you know, jumping the route or just, you know, playing to make the tackle after a short gain. And that happened to both of them. And the Arkansas receivers got around them because they were kind of caught in no man's land. But, the defensive back performance has been good for the most part this year, but it seems to have regressed in the last couple of games.
Yeah, I think that's true. Tackling is an issue, too, that we're not talking about, especially in the backfield. There were several instances of that poor tackling this past Saturday. But, you know, on the positive side, we're getting some quality minutes out of Akeem Auguste.
Who?
Yeah, exactly. I know. And if we can get a good, you know, two more games and a bowl game out of him, that would be awesome. That would be hugely helpful.
Well, he is a good player, and you could actually see that. He made a pass breakup. I want to say it was this week, or might have been in the Tennessee game.
He made one this week in the end zone.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about. I mean, he broke up a pass. I mean, the guy's experienced. He's a good player. And we need him, especially now with Gurley out for the year. You got to have that other guy coming in to give you enough DBs to get through a game with a spread team like we're going to see in a couple of weeks. I mean, and to your point about the tackling, yeah, we've got to start making those tackles on the edge when those little flat passes are thrown, because you're going to see an awful lot of that in 2 weeks.
Right. Yeah, no doubt. All right. And, special teams was not bad on Saturday. Adam Yates was 1 out of 2 on field goals, but one of them was, 51, 52-yarder that he didn't miss by much. There were some curious, the kickoffs were a little bit curious, because Yates – when he tried to boot it deep, he did it pretty easily. But he had those, and particularly after Swearinger got the 15-yard penalty and we had to kick off from, I believe it's the 20-yard line, that's one of the best kickoffs you will ever see, because he pinned that guy right in the corner, right at the 5-yard line, I believe, And we tackled him between the 20 and 25, if I remember correctly. But he just pinned the guy in the corner where he couldn't let it go because it might not have gone out of bounds. So he had to catch it and run it back. That's one of the best kickoffs you'll see. But in between, there were those couple of squib kicks. He got away with one of them that trickled into the end zone, and one of them just bounced straight to the guy. They ran it back to, you know, 40, 45-yard line. But, you know, and the return game seems to have left us a little bit here. Bruce even took a knee on one kickoff, you know, only about 3 yards deep, which is pretty rare. If you're less than 5 yards deep, the vast majority of kick returners are gonna bring that ball out.
That's the we had a great deal of conversation at the game about the kicking game. If you remember, we had two kind of debates going on. One was, did Yates kick those balls that way on purpose? You know, because he was just booming the ball, and then all of a sudden you'd get one that was just odd. Was he kicking those squibs on purpose, or did he just miss them that badly? And the other one, the kind of funny moment, was something Buck said, and this is after Ellington had taken a knee a couple of times. He had one, and he brought it out and got tackled at about the 20. And Buck looks at us and says, he had to bring that one out, or people were going to start questioning his manhood.
Well, I think the kicking game, I think that him kneeling when he does, I think that's the Florida. I think he's been coached after the Florida game to really be careful about that. And number two, we haven't mentioned the punter, but something's gotten into Tyler Hull the last couple of games. The guy has gotten off his best punt of the year by far. You know, maybe the legend of Tyler Hull can actually mean something, because the guy looked like an actual SEC punter on Saturday.
Right, he did look good. All right, let's do some rubber chickens. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Knock it out. No telling what he's probably going to give it to the person who took our ticket at the stadium.
I always try to come up with a different standard. You know, what's the analysis? What's the makeup of the Rubber Chicken Award? And I try to keep that a fresh, moving target. And this week, I think there's really only one choice, and all three of you the other two of you need to pick it. If you can sandwich three 15-yard penalties around a touchdown and then have the coach call you out in the post game as having a great game and then be named Walter Camp Defensive Player in the Nation, you have to at least get the Rubber Chicken Award.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm thinking it goes to DJ Swearinger.
Well, that'll just cap his week off right there.
Yeah. Somebody needs to let him know on Twitter or something that he is, in addition to the other honors, he has also won
the
Rubber Chicken Award.
Spurrier must not have remembered it in the Liberty Bowl. When did we play? 2006 in the Liberty Bowl, when Kenny McKinley scored that touchdown and he just chunked the ball into the stands. And after the game, Spurrier said, well, I was going to give him a game ball, but he threw it in the stands.
And that's so, right. That's exactly what he said.
You know, when it came to Swearinger on Saturday, he basically said, oh, that's all right. No big deal. You know, he didn't really, you know, most coaches will at least give lip service to, you know, we don't want our players acting like that. He's, you know, run a few extra stairs or something like that. Spurrier was like, ah, well, didn't hurt us. So it was a little surprising.
If you haven't heard Todd Ellis's call on that touchdown return, that interception touchdown return, you need to listen to it. It is the most Todd Ellis call ever.
Were there a couple of booms in there?
Well, that's the thing. He's just started saying boom after every play. It doesn't matter what happens. He says boom at the end of it.
Yeah.
And so he did say boom a couple of times, but he doesn't identify the player who makes the interception for a long period of time.
That irritates
me. That's a minor detail.
Yeah.
And then the other thing he does is he screams while Swearinger's in the end zone. He screams, revenge is a thing.
You could
tell he was about to say, revenge is a dish best served cold. But something in his brain clicked and he thought, well, wait, the personal foul injury or penalty just happened. And maybe I'm not exactly sure what that saying means.
Right. Well, but because I haven't gone in to put the show in post-production, put it together yet, we're actually leading in with that clip. And they also say, well, there's a flag. And Tommy Sugg says, well, he threw the ball into the stands. It's going to be a 15-yard penalty. And Todd goes, who cares? So,
which he, you know, we haven't had anybody say that since Tommy said it when Brandon Bennett dove over the end in the end zone in Athens that year.
Yeah. All right, G man, who you got?
Well, I need to comment real quickly on that. I'm gonna wager that DJ Swearinger, who we all acknowledge is having a great year and is a true stud. What do y'all want to bet he doesn't make first or second team All-SEC?
Oh no, he's starting to get the publicity now. He will be first or second team.
He's never gotten any accolades in the conference whatsoever.
Yeah.
Until now. But anyway,
that's because they don't give any awards for grinding.
Well, Edward Ashoff with ESPN today, I don't know, he posted a video where he talks about Swearinger and said that he's the best safety in the league right now. So hopefully he'll get the respect he deserves.
I hope he does. But all right, I'm going to go with Bruce Ellington, who we've already talked about. But I think what you're seeing is a guy who is after a couple years of football, you know, back to football, is starting to truly turn into a polished receiver. He's not just an athlete out there running around trying to make some plays. He's obviously a superior athlete, but he's now starting to turn into a true receiver, doing the little things that it takes to get open, getting yards after the catch. Everybody knows what a phenomenal athlete he is. I mean, he just shows it. And I've said this before, but I think to you guys, but when he was in high school, he was second only to Marcus in some of the early recruiting publications that came out before they took him off because they didn't think he was going to be playing any football. So the guy was known at that time to be a superior talent. And we're now seeing it. He's starting to show it. As a polished receiver, and I think his coming out party the last 2 weeks has been great to see. He's now, I think, turned into Shull's go-to guy, at least for the time being. It's fun to see, fun to watch somebody blossom like he's blossoming, and he's a truly talent out there at receiver for us. We really needed somebody to emerge, and he seems to be emerging.
Well, I'm curious you guys' thoughts on this issue. You know, the issue always with a dual sport athlete is should he be concentrating on one or the other? If you were advising Bruce Ellington, if he had to choose, which sport would he choose?
At this point, I think I'm going to say football. But there is a rumor going around Columbia that after this season, he's going to choose. And he's only going to play one sport or the other next year. So, of course, that same rumor was circulated last year, and it didn't happen. But I think I would say football. I think he has a better chance to make it at the next level as a football player, maybe as a returner and a slot receiver. A slot receiver, third receiver in the NFL. It's really hard for a 5'10 player to make it in the NBA. I mean, look at Devin Downey, who was spectacular. Just spectacular. Had the outside shot, the quickness, couldn't make it in the NBA. I mean, Bruce is not Devin. He's a good player, but he's not Devin. So I would say football.
Yeah, I mean, I think potentially he could be a better basketball player than a better football player on the collegiate level if he just focused on basketball. But I agree. You know, you got a 5'9", 5'10 guy. He's just not going to make it in the NBA. Whereas, you know, he might have a shot in the NFL if he can put together a couple of strong seasons going out at South Carolina. So, be interesting to see because. And I was going to get to it during the basketball segment, but I will get to it during the basketball segment. I'm going to give a dual rubber chicken award to Jarrell Adams and Mike Davis, both for their first collegiate touchdowns on Saturday. So congratulations to those two guys for their first touchdowns. Okay, quick editor's note here. I was informed after the show that Mike Davis actually has two touchdowns this year. So my mistake, save your emails. So this week we got Wofford and Spurrier as they said on the radio Saturday, things are setting up nicely for Steve Spurrier. He could tie the all-time wins record this week against Wofford and then take sole possession of first place next week if we could beat Clemson. And T-Bone, I know we talked about this a couple of years ago. I know you and I did. G-Man may have been part of the conversation. Couple of years ago, we're thinking, well, if he stays for like four more years, he might be able to break the record.
Yeah, we did not see the wins, the double digit wins piling up the way they have.
Right.
I mean, 10 and 11 and a shot at 10 and 11 again. Right. Just did not see that. I mean, so he's gotten there quicker than we thought.
Yeah.
After what we can all look at each other in the eye and admit was a slow start.
Right. Right.
You know, he's really, really turned it on. I'm a little concerned, and I mentioned this to you guys, that I always thought he would stay as long as Marcus stayed, you know, if not longer. But if he breaks the record with Clemson and then we do well in the bowl game, is he going to get tempted to go to the beach and play some golf?
Nope.
You know, I'm not sure.
Nope.
I don't know what's going to happen there.
I think he's got too good of a team coming back next year.
I agree with that. He's back.
Yeah, I just think too good of a team. Schedule gets a little more favorable. You know, if he has another year next year like this one, you know, we win some sort of a championship, SEC East, SEC, or, you know, even if we don't. If we don't, maybe he thinks, well, that was my best shot. I've given it a good run. But I don't know. We'll see. All right, around the SEC, let's see. LSU beat Mississippi State 37-17. Welcome back to Earth, Mississippi State, and Dan Mullen. Let's see. What else happened? The Florida game. Jeez Louise. Florida scores two touchdowns in the last, you know, in the last minute, the final one on a block punt to beat Louisiana Lafayette. And even though they struggled against Lafayette and they've struggled, you know, they didn't play well against Georgia, man, they still beat us, Texas A&M, and LSU. I mean, are they schizophrenic or what? Are they young? I mean,
I want to say this about Florida, and Lord knows I can't stand them, okay? But I want to say this. One thing that is under-recognized is the value of special teams, okay? Those guys have won ball games. They won Saturday, and they beat us with special teams. And our special teams have historically, at least recently, been very poor, and that has lost us in ball games. So those guys put an emphasis on it, and it's paid off for them because everybody says, well, Florida offense, the offense sucks. Well, it's certainly not very good, but they got two out of the three facets of the game going for them, defense and special teams, where other teams may be good on offense and defense and terrible on special teams. Well, those guys can play special teams, and that is a big factor.
Yep, I can't deny it. They got some good athletes they put out there. Derek Dooley's fate is seemingly been decided with a quadruple overtime loss to Missouri. And, you know, Missouri all of a sudden is 5-5. I know they have Texas A&M left, which is a loss. I'm not sure who else they got on the schedule, but they got a shot to be bowl eligible when
Syracuse.
Okay. That didn't look possible a couple of weeks ago the way they were playing. Actually, Tennessee is still bowl eligible. They'd have to beat Vandy and Kentucky, which is certainly not out of the realm of possibilities. Then I was speaking of Vandy. Nice comeback win for Vanderbilt over Ole Miss. I was able to get home in time to check out the end of that game, and that's a good win for James Franklin, and I feel pretty good for those guys, actually. I was kind of hating them at the beginning of the year, but they've bounced back and had a nice season. And then Georgia rolls into Auburn 38-0, and they're going to the SEC title game. I heard the funniest commercial right when I was getting home and getting out of the car listening to sports talk radio. They had a commercial for the SEC championship game, And they said something about, you know, Georgia's been taking on all comers, whipping everybody, yada, yada, yada. And then they said something like, and Alabama has struggled against quality teams this year, so it should be a great battle. And I'm like, who has Alabama struggled against? They haven't struggled against many people. They did lose a game against Texas A&M, but, man, I'm getting to where I can't. The Georgia stuff has started already. I mean, it is it's going to be unbearable the next couple of weeks. And then, you know, the big game, Texas A&M beats Alabama, and Johnny Manziel deserves the Heisman, period. Anybody disagree?
I think he got himself a ticket to New York when he mishandled that snap, ran into his own player, somehow caught the fumble, and then threw a touchdown pass on Saturday.
Right.
That was an incredible play. I think that's the ticket to New York. I don't know whether he'll win or not.
Buck, you're serious? You think he deserves the Heisman?
I think he does. Look at his numbers. I mean, his numbers are better than Klein, better than Barner out at Oregon. I think he deserves it.
It'll never happen.
But, I'm not saying it will.
He's one of the better players in the country, but it's not going to happen. They're not going to give it to a freshman.
I went and looked at his numbers today on the season. He's got a lot more passing yards than I thought he had. And he's the leading rusher in the SEC. You know, I agree. I mean, but because he's a freshman, he probably won't win it. But I think he deserves it as much as anybody. So let's talk about bowl scenarios. G-Man, you wanted to talk about the bowl scenarios now that, you know, we've kind of – it looks like the sugar is out of the question. Maybe not completely. I mean, a lot of crazy stuff could happen, but it appears to be out as we sit here today, which leaves us back with the usual suspects, Capital One, Outback, Gator, Chick-fil-A. And I don't think – the way Texas A&M – you got Texas A&M, LSU, Alabama. Don't think we're going to get the cotton with all those West teams out that way. What would – G-Man, what would you prefer?
Personally, and this is not because they're the best games, I just think that just my personal preference would be going to the Gator Bowl or to the Chick-fil-A Bowl, even though they're you know, not as prestigious as the Capital One and maybe even the Outback. You know, we haven't been to the Gator Bowl in a long time. I think we would travel really well to Jacksonville. I think we travel really well to Atlanta as well. I mean, that's just my personal preference. I mean, it's obviously disappointing to know that's where we would end up based on what we were hoping for. I'd love to go to the Cotton. I'd love to go back to the Capital One. But, you know, this is a year where I think I texted about this. This is a very top-heavy haves and have-nots type of season in college football. You've got a lot of teams who have won a lot of games who are up there, and then you got a lot of teams who just flat-out suck.
Right.
And so you've got, you know, a lot of competition at the top level. I mean, we are 6-2 in the conference, and we're – 9th in the BCS standings, and we're 6th in the BCS standings in the conference.
Right.
How crazy is that?
I mean,
the SEC has 6 of the top 9 BCS schools right now, and we are in last place in that grouping. I mean, it's just sort of mind-boggling, but that means there's 5 schools ranked ahead of us in the conference. You know, in this crazy formula that they have, and you know, and you just look at the bowl scenarios. You know, you're going to have somebody. I still think there's a good chance you're going to have Alabama in the championship game, and then you know you're probably going to have LSU in the Sugar Bowl. A&M probably goes to the Cotton Bowl. Georgia probably goes to the Capital One Bowl, and Florida probably goes to the Outback Bowl. I mean, if things fall like you would think they would fall,
right?
So that's sort of my thinking on that. So Gator or Chick-fil-A.
Now tell me this: if Bama does get back into the championship game, can we still send 2 teams to other BCS games,
no,
or is that only
no,
one? Only one.
No,
okay.
No. That's the big. That's the travesty with the system.
Right.
I mean, last year, Bama goes and LSU goes, and I think that's who went, right? LSU.
Right, right. And Arkansas is like number four in the BCS and didn't go anywhere.
Had to go to the
didn't
Cotton.
Go.
That's right.
And so, and then, you know, Virginia Tech, as horrible as they were, it'd go to the Sugar Bowl.
Right.
You know? And the same thing could happen this year. You know, Clemson, you know, could go to the Sugar Bowl after playing, you know, I mean, really, I mean, the Southern Conference has some better teams in it than the ACC. I mean, honestly. I mean, really, they honestly do. And they could go to the Sugar Bowl. I mean, and all the SEC schools stay home or go to, you know, the Music City Bowl.
Right, right, right.
And that's why this system, you know, is going away in a year or two, and we'll all be better off.
Yeah.
And it needs to go away. One thing, though, to kind of caution, you know, you've got a sixth in the conference in BCS rankings. If you look at the way the rest of the season plays out, Florida's going to play Florida State. We're going to play Clemson, and Georgia and Alabama are going to play each other. Those are the really only three games that involve top 15 BCS teams. So, you know, we could move up in the pecking order even if everybody wins out.
Right. That's true. That's true. But LSU is not going to lose, I don't think, again. And you know, they still trump us for the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah, well, and that's the East-West breakdown is still going to get us because the bowls were kind of all wanting or to the West
right
this year. So
I don't see us going. I think Capital One Bowl is your best-case scenario at this point. I don't think you're going to end up in – I think Texas A&M and LSU are going to end up in the – if Alabama makes it, you have LSU and A&M and the Cotton and the Sugar, respectively, or however that works out. That's what would happen. But, I mean, I still think there's a good chance that Oregon gets beat by Southern Cal. I mean, in the if they end up back in the championship game in the pack, whatever they are. And I think that Texas – believe it or not, I think they have a good shot of beating Kansas State. So, I mean, a lot can happen. People have already predetermined this championship game, but we all know that as soon as you predetermine something in college football, it changes.
Right. And the other thing is we could also, just like you mentioned, we could win out, beat Clemson, and in effect only deny Clemson the BCS Bowl and also play ourselves out of the Chick-fil-A Bowl.
Right.
Because you know, the number two ACC team goes to the Chick-fil-A, and I think the Chick-fil-A is going to want Clemson pretty bad if they're you know, available.
You know what the other horror story is, and I don't want to get Buck to go do anything crazy to himself, but I could see Georgia beating Alabama
and then playing Clemson in the Sugar Bowl.
I can see them playing. I can see them beating them, guys. I mean, Alabama is good, but they're not the Alabama of last year. I mean, nobody shredded them like LSU and then Texas A&M. Nobody shredded them like that last year. Nobody even came close. And so, I mean, they're better on offense, but they're not even close as good as they were on defense. And Georgia can move the football. I mean, they really can. We pummeled them. The stars aligned that day, and we pummeled them, and that was tremendous. But I'm telling you, I think it could happen.
I think it could too. I just really – that's a depressing thought. But
it is.
Yeah. T-Bone, you got a bowl preference?
Yeah, I'm all for the Gator. If there's a way that we can win, and I hope that there's a way we can win out, and if we get passed over by the Cotton, maybe the Capital One – right. I'm all for the Gator. We'll get a middling Big Ten team, which I don't know what that means this year. I don't know if they send a MAC team to represent them as a middling Big Ten team. And it's in Jacksonville, which we recruit in Jacksonville pretty heavy, and it's not a bad drive. I'd love to go to the Gator.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'm throw them in a hat, pull one out as far as I'm concerned. How about the I read an interesting thing on 247 Sports today about the, you know, we're talking about the potential coaching changes coming up, and let me just throw these things out there and let you guys comment. Oregon, there's a lot of talk of Chip Kelly leaving for the NFL. No big deal. May get replaced by Chris Peterson out of Boise State. Tennessee, leading candidates, John Gruden, And a name that has come up on a few coaching jobs now is Mike Gundy from Oklahoma State. His agent has got to be floating his name out there or something, because he's come up for the Tennessee gig, Mike Gundy at Arkansas, Mike Gundy at Kentucky. His name's been mentioned in association with all three of those jobs. Charlie Strong's name has been mentioned for Tennessee. Not as strong with Arkansas as I think we thought he would be. Auburn, three names making the rounds. Kirby Smart, Jimbo Fisher leaving FSU. Apparently not happy with the boosters down there. And then Gus Malzahn coming back to the Plains. And did Tom O'Brien, has he been fired already at NC State? Or is he retiring or something?
I don't know. I saw a thing this week where they were talking about James Franklin as the logical choice for that, but I had not heard of a change there.
Yeah. And then Arkansas, the big name right now is Gary Patterson, which I don't particularly want that to happen. So that's going to be kind of fun to watch, though, guys. Well, scrambling.
Interesting, you never mentioned Petrino's name once, which I thought, you know, are people really going to have morals here and not hire the guy? I mean, I'd be shocked if he didn't land in one of these jobs.
Yeah. Now, that this particular article did not mention Petrino one time.
Wow.
Which was a little surprising. I agree.
Maybe there's going to be a year waiting period before somebody can go to their president and convince them. But I mean, I certainly expect to see him back in the SEC.
What'll happen is Tuberville will go to Kentucky and Petrino will go to Texas Tech. I mean, that's where they go to wash him out, right? You know, send him to Texas Tech.
True. Yeah, those are some interesting scenarios there. Gundy, I'd be surprised to see him drop as low as something like Kentucky. I can see him at Tennessee. Gruden is not going to Tennessee. Gruden's going to be back in the NFL. I can't see him taking the Tennessee job. Gundy, yeah, I could see him doing that, because you're over there in the whatever they were. They still calling themselves the Big 12, even though they got 10 teams. And it's
funny how Buck and I were both letting you just twist on that.
I get confused with the Big 10,
the Big 10.
12 teams and the. You know, it's just so screwed up. But
revenge is a thing.
But I can see him wanting to get to a little bigger, place, or a little more publicity. A little, you know, Oklahoma State is always going to be second fiddle to Oklahoma, who's always going to be second fiddle to Texas. I mean, you know, it's just not going to get you on the national stage as much as you do in the SEC.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be fun to watch. I'm glad we got a coach in place for now. Hopefully we'll have him for a few more years. Basketball team tipped off on Sunday. And I got to tell you, when we were down by 17 points in the first half to the University of Wisconsin at Milwaukee, I was thinking, man, there can be some games where we're only going to have like 500 people in the stands, even with Frank Martin. But I tell you what, that team was fun to watch in the second half. Just a lot of energy. The big story was Michael Carrera, 17 points and 15 rebounds. One of the best freshman debuts in a Gamecock uniform that I can remember.
The Venezuelan Vortex. Are we going to try to make that stick? Yeah. just a placeholder for now.
That's a mouthful.
Right. 6'5", and he was just he was yelling at his teammates when they weren't in the right spot, and he was a fireball. Fireball is what I was thinking about calling him, but that's a little more southern, not real Venezuelan. Venezuelan may take fireball in a different context. I don't know. Lachey Page was kind of what we thought he would be. 19 points, had 17 in the second half. Minda Casinas, nice debut. 8 points, 13 rebounds. That cat played with a lot of confidence. He looked good on the boards. I think he's going to be a good one for us. We actually shot 84% from the free throw line on Sunday, which is anti-Darren Horn era level numbers there. I think we were like around 65% for most of his tenure, so it was good to see us knocking down some free throws. G-Man, you're the basketball guy. I mentioned this. I mean, we got no contribution, none, from R.J. Slauson, from Damian Leonard. It comes out that Slauson had cramps through most of the second half. We're really going to need him to contribute. And then Damian Leonard, man, I hate to jump on the guy, but here we are at the beginning of his sophomore year, and he was coming in. He was supposed to be something special. And he's, aside from a couple of games last year, he has done next to nothing.
He can do one thing and one thing only.
Shoot. And he can't do that very well.
Well, you know, he's got a great stroke when he's open, but he has a hard time getting open. He has a hard time creating his own shot, which is extremely important in basketball, is to be able to occasionally create your own shot. And he has a hard time doing that. And Martin's flat out said, I've heard him say it a couple times already, if you can't play defense his way, you're not going to play.
Right.
And somebody asked him after the game, I listened to his post game. I missed watching the game because I was at a family function out of town. And I hate that I missed it because I'm a season ticket holder and I plan to be at most of the games, but I hated that I missed the debut. And I haven't even seen any highlights, but I did listen to the post game in the car on the way back from out of town. And Martin was asked point blank, why was Williams sitting over there with you? And he came in overtime and just blew it up and won the game. And he goes, well, in a real nice way, he said that he doesn't know what we're doing on defense.
Right.
And he also has alluded to that with Leonard. So, he's just not going to play you if you can't play hard-nosed man-to-man defense. And that's why Eric Smith was playing point guard, because
right,
he's getting it more than Williams is getting it. But I expect you're going to see more of Williams. He's just going to be too explosive not to have on the court. I mean, I think he's going to be one of our better offensive players. Leonard, he may just be a bust, man. I mean, or maybe he gets a little bulkier and a little tougher. But to play for Martin, I think the key word, for the characteristic he's looking for, toughness.
Right.
That's what he wants. He's going to drive to the basket, he's going to get fouled, and he's going to get to the line. I mean, that's what the guy wants. We're going to shoot a lot of free throws. We won that game with 0 3-point shots.
Right.
Zero.
Right.
And I don't think he cares.
Yeah.
And he's going to drive to the hoop, he's going to get fouled, he's going to play tough defense. And that's in the rebound. I think rebound. I mean, that is, value the basketball. And it's going to be fun to watch. I mean, somebody, and this is really getting you in the way back machine here. This is the beginning of my basketball following days, but somebody compared Carrera to Jimmy Foster.
Yes, Jimmy Foster, man. That dude was a beast.
I haven't seen anybody rebound like that since Jimmy Foster. I mean, that's taking it back.
That is.
I thought that was kind of cool to reference, because that dude was just a rebounding machine. We were bad when he was here, but the dude could rebound.
Yeah, and he'd throw a punch every now and then too.
But
before you got suspended for throwing a punch, he was all elbows, man. Yeah, it's funny you bring up the Eric Smith Brenton Williams thing, because Williams, I think in one of the exhibitions he scored like 22 points and had the game winning basket. And he did not play. I don't remember seeing him in the second half. And watching Eric Smith play, love the guy, love his effort. But when I watch him play, it just makes me sad that he's the best option we have at point guard. And it hit me with about 5 minutes to go in regulation. I was like, where's Brenton Williams? Why has he not been on the floor the entire second half? And then Smith went out with cramps, and Williams comes in and scored. I believe he scored 10 points in the last 2 minutes of overtime and just took over. But I certainly understand, the Martin philosophy. You got to be able to play defense. And it may be one of those Hoosiers things where he's going to say, look, you're going to sit. He's going to teach him a lesson before they finally get in line.
Well, it was the first game. And I think Martin knows that he's going to have to instill his philosophy in these guys. And he knows he's not going to win that many games this year. So this is a tone setting season right now.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, man, we are coming up on an hour, I think, of showtime. I don't think we've ever had a show
I'm
run.
Sorry,
this long.
I fell asleep there for a while.
we were coming to you for your basketball analysis.
Oh, yes, I don't follow basketball.
Women's basketball. Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about this.
This week in Dabo.
All right, real quick. I don't think we talked about this on the podcast last week. The Robert Kimdiche situation. He decommitted, officially decommitted from Clemson last week, and now Clemson's still in the mix along with Ole Miss, Alabama, Georgia. And, you know, when the news first comes out, everybody at Clemson's jumping off bridges. But we learned what, T-Bone, about?
It was, and I completely believe this, just the way that I believe that revenge is a thing. And that is, it was a mutual decision. The coaching staff there at Clemson, I'm not sure if y'all are aware of this, but they're concerned about their young men, even their recruits, in a way that we will never understand. Right. And so the pressure that was on Kimdiche was too much, and so Dabo decided it would be a good idea if he went ahead and decommitted now, and so that he could get some of the pressure off of him. And Clemson would be there for him after the process is finished.
Well, that's honorable.
Did he also ask the other guy, Kamara, who decommitted today, did he also ask him to decommit as well for the same
apparently, reason? Yeah, apparently they're going through the list and they're picking the guys that have too much pressure on them, and they're gonna suggest they decommit.
They're protecting those guys. I don't remember anybody wondering about his commitment, but I guess it was a lot of internal pressure.
Yeah, apparently so.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, good for, you know, they're building quality human beings up there at Clemson. One decommitment at a time. The other thing I was going to mention about the Tigers is I was listening to 680 The Fan here in Atlanta on the way home, and Chuck Oliver, the king of college football, he said, you know, the Clemson people that he knows do not want to talk about any bowl game except the Sugar Bowl. They don't even want to entertain the thought of playing anywhere but the Sugar Bowl. And he said, you know what? Even if Clemson wins out, if they beat NC State and beat South Carolina, there's a good chance that if Oklahoma wins out, that the Sugar Bowl will choose an Oklahoma-Alabama Sugar Bowl over a Clemson-Alabama Sugar Bowl, because they want to go ahead and get this Big 12 SEC Champions Bowl game thing started. So another,
and that's the whole point. Why do you think the Clemson crowd wants that bowl so bad?
Right.
They want anything. I mean, if you could give them three wooden blocks that had SEC on it, they would put them in a trophy case. I mean, right. They're just obsessed with that right now.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
The problem, though, and I alluded to this, I think in a text, is there are just not that many teams this year because of suspensions and
right.
ineligibility and all. I mean, they're not going to be able to fill these BCS games. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, you're going to have some strange looking matchups out there. But it's interesting, though, just on the whole Clemson. You know, right now they're just budding with confidence. You know, their defense is, of course, leaps and bounds better than it was at the beginning of the year. I mean, they have just turned the corner on defense, according to everybody I've heard lately around here. And, you know, we better watch out because their defense is on, and, you know, and their offense is clicking. You know, it's just – and I heard somebody making this argument on the radio, and the next guy called in, and he's like, you know, Maryland had their ninth-string quarterback guy, you know, a true freshman redshirt – you pulled the red shirt off, linebacker,
right,
quarterback, and they want to brag on how awesome their defense is now. I mean,
didn't you hear the way they explain that? I literally this week, in talking about the Maryland game, or I guess last week, talking about the Maryland game, the word from WCCP was, this is particularly difficult for Clemson because how do you prepare for someone you have no film on?
Yeah, good point.
And I don't know. I saw it. I didn't see a single highlight from Saturday, the Maryland Clemson game, but I saw the week before, and linebacker quarterback boy was wearing number 31, lining up under center, like it's a youth football game, and they didn't have enough single digit jersey numbers or something.
Hey, they probably didn't even have any film on him from high school.
Because he was playing linebacker. Coach, I played quarterback in eighth grade.
The number 31 jersey was the coach kind of sending a message.
Saying we suck and we know
this is not my team. There's a guy out there playing quarterback wearing number 31.
Hey, look, this is the best we can do, guys. All right, good. Well, good show. One more home game for the seniors on Saturday against Wofford. Hopefully we can contain that triple option offense, and then we'll have a big show for you guys next week, looking ahead to the big game against the Clemson Tigers. All right, before we sign off, we'd like to remind all you Gamecock fans, and I had to make an adjustment. We were a little off on our day count. It's a little less than we thought. But it's still been 1,446 days since South Carolina lost to Clemson in football. I am Buck for the RubberChickensBlog.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at RubberChickens. That's R-U-B-R Chickens. So tell your friends, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks, everybody.
I hopped off the plane at LAX with a dream in my cardigan. Welcome to the land of fame excess. Am I gonna fit in? Jumped in the cab, here I am for the first time. Look to my right and I see the Hollywood sign. This is all so crazy. Everybody seems so famous. My tummy's turning and I'm feeling kinda homesick. Too much pressure and I'm nervous. That's when the taxi man turned on the radio. And a Jay-Z song was on. And the Jay-Z song was on. And the Jay-Z song was on. So I put my hands up to play my song. The butterflies fly away. Nodding my head like yeah. Moving my hips like yeah. Got my hands up to play my song. We know I'm gonna be okay. Yeah. It's a party in the USA. Yeah. It's a party in the USA. Get to the club in my taxi cab. Everybody's looking at me now. Like, who's that chick that's rocking kicks? She gotta be from out of town.